Wacomico County Branch of the NAACP has a new president, Dr. Bronte DeShield. Welcome to Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush. She succeeds Mary Ashanti, who has retired and been a longtime figure in Wacomico County's African-American community. DeShield says she hopes to increase the membership by 20% to 30% and work with minority-owned businesses as they struggle the coronavirus pandemic. And we have Dr. DeShield on the phone with us this morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, or good afternoon, whichever it might be. Right. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So what do you see as the biggest challenge with the NAACP here in Wacomico County in terms, is it getting more people involved? What's your sense about that?
Yes, I think definitely increasing the capacity, and that allows our arms to stretch a little wider with serving the community. Right now, we do have committees that are standing, but many of those committees have one or two people who have been really doing a lot of work by themselves. So it's really important that we get more community members in the membership, and intergenerational, meaning those people who have been there for many years, including President Ashanti. We need their wisdom, so we want them to stay, but we also want to bring along that synergy from the young folks who are being a part of the Black Lives Matter movement, and all the other social justice issues that are happening currently in our community. So I'm hoping to increase that capacity to allow us to stretch our arms a little wider and be able to serve in a higher level and higher capacity within our communities for various issues.
So how do you get more young people into the NAACP? I mean, obviously, they've been a real spearhead when it comes to the Black Lives Matter movement. How do you draw them in? I mean, has there been a problem with that, or have they seen other avenues as opposed to your organization?
I think really, you know, the younger generations have a different mindset than our founding members. For example, NAACP has, in some people's eyes, a very conservative perspective when it comes to dealing with social justice and various community issues. So for some of the young people or younger generation, they feel it's too conservative for them and that they're not wanted and their ideas aren't used or can be used in a way that is, I guess, productive. But I think that if I can sit them down and have a conversation with many of them that I've already spoken to, including some of my students that I'm serving in a high school capacity, that they understand that we need to have that foundation. That conservative perspective is very important, while the energy that they possess and kind of the way of doing things that are non-traditional when it comes to protests or rallies and gatherings that may be very, very hot topics within our communities, that we need both. We need that wisdom, and we need their energy as well. So I want to be able to pull that together at a table and be able to serve in a higher capacity, and that they will see that their ideas and energy are valued. It's just about us meeting and compromising, meeting in the middle. So I think that may have been a challenge because I've gotten lots of questions in the last 2 years where people are saying, is NAACP a relevant component to our communities now? Because it's been around for 111 years plus, people think that maybe their ways aren't the ways of what in which we can connect with the younger generations. And I find that not to be true. I think it's even more relevant today than ever at this point of time, from the George Floyd incidents this summer to the Breonna Taylor's, Ahmaud Arbery's, and other issues that have happened and continue to happen within our community of minorities. So I'm hoping to be able to bring that synergy and that mindset in a compromisable level where we can gain strength and vision from one another and be able to propel that to the next level forward.
Well, let's turn to Black Lives Matter and particularly police abuse. I know that you favor somehow a citizens review board. Certainly, I guess you have been talking to Chief Barbara Duncan. One, how is that conversation going? And two, of course, the bigger person out there is, of course, the Wacomico County Sheriff, Mike Lewis. How is that going in terms of trying to get a review board to oversee law enforcement?
Mm-hmm. The conversations that we had this summer, several conversations, we put it on our calendar per month to meet this summer, went very well with getting to know Chief Duncan, myself, And some people who have already worked with her previously and continue to work with her, they already have that rapport. So it was a great time for me to build that relationship with her and her great team of people there and really talk about some incidents that were very concerning for us in our communities at that time. We hope that the Citizens Review Board, will be able to move forward in the next few months. Because of some other things that were happening within our community, we weren't able to continue the conversation. We kind of paused for, like, I would say about a good 6 weeks or so, and hoping to bring that forward. I have not had the chance to have a conversation and sit down with Mike Lewis, and I'm hoping to do that within the next few months or so, so we can all be on the same page within the city and the county. I know that Chief Duncan is currently training some citizens and community and getting them information. I forgot what they're really calling it right now. I can't think of it right now. But in which the pillars in the community who have that connection with the neighborhoods, more hands-on, are getting trained and being able to pass that information along in the community to bring that bond back to serve that police serve the community and are of the community, and we don't see them as a threat, but as an extended family member, and that we all can come to the table and make sure we are looking out for one another, that we have their back as police officers because they're one of us, and that they have our back because we see them as one of us as well. I think that's very important, and I'm hoping that that will be moving forward in the months to come.
How effective do you think a review board would be? I mean, we've seen them in other cities. I came from Los Angeles, for example, and sometimes they seem less than effective. How can you make something that effective? And what do you see as the sort of the purview for these folks in terms of oversight, particularly for particular incidents?
I think it could be successful. I think, unlike L.A., we're much smaller, Wacomico County, and we have a close-knit community. And I believe that as once we're on the same page and able to have those same goals and visions and missions to move forward, I think it would be something, maybe a model for the other counties that surround us on the Eastern Shore. I do think and hope, I should say I hope, I'm very hopeful that it will be a positive movement and that it will happen. I think that it's very much needed for us to be a part of the hiring process, for us to be a part of looking at incidents that may be of people abusing their authority in our community, being able to pinpoint and have access to what type of training is being dispersed within that unit, what type of reprimands may be placed on people who are abusing their power or choose to outsize as a more rebel, quote to say. They're not sticking to protocol and think that no one's watching or no one's looking. And as we all know, as human beings, even when you think people don't see you, someone sees you. So I would like to really start building that relationship, which we have already, and be able to help them see the value, which I think she does, Chief Duncan does, the value of having that community involvement with what happens with our police force. Their positions are paid by the taxes that we pay, you know, and we want to make sure that we have a fair glance at what they have to work with from recruiting. I mentioned to her about minority recruiting and making sure there's balance there, not just with minorities of color, but also in women, making sure that they have training to understand, for example, mental health issues that definitely are a part of human behavior and knowing how and when to deal with that in a way that's professional and still not dehumanizing the people that they may be arresting, and knowing that they have a mental health or psychiatric impairment. Those type of things are things we've discussed and topics that are definitely at the priority list of what we want to see with the Citizens Review Board and being able to help be a collaborative mission on a community feeling comfortable to go to the police and know that the police are going to be there to back them. I think with all that has happened in our communities in the last, six, seven, 8 months, people aren't as comfortable as they may have been before. So I would like to see that happen in our community. And again, hopefully we can be a model for the communities around us, Worcester County, Dorchester, Somerset. You know, I'm hoping that the coalitions that we have on other boards and other collaborative committees, that we can do this together, and that will be definitely a beacon of light to say that police and the people in the community can work together and can create very positive outcomes without taking a risk to be seen as being disrespectful to a culture or a group of people.
Let me ask you this. Do you see that Sheriff Mike Lewis might be a bit tougher? I know that he supported the passage of a Second Amendment sanctuary, and I know you folks opposed it. Address certainly the Second Amendment sanctuary issue, but that relationship that Mike Lewis, I mean, he obviously pulled back, I believe, but nonetheless, this does seem to be a different view of the world between the two of you.
Yeah, very true. We were and are still against that sanctuary for the Second Amendment, to a sanctuary. And we did have, I think just before it being brought up in the county council, we had a rally, and that was a collaborative effort amongst the pastors and ministers in the community. Mike Lewis happened to be at that rally, and we made it very clear of how we felt about the whole issue, and then how we wanted to make sure our voices, that's an elected position, our voices are heard, and that we put you in that position because we voted for you. It's very important that you are considering how we feel. It's very important that you are considering what we have said to you, and that you use that, not just your own agenda, but you use the community's feeling, emotions, stance, before you make decisions and make us feel as if you never heard us in the first place. So I think that rally, that unity rally that we had that day, may have resonated with him a little differently. I've met him on a few occasions, and I would say we have a positive rapport, and I'm looking forward to sitting down with him and discuss more of collaborative efforts and letting him, and I think the pastor there, Reverend Watson, put it very clearly, just as if we elected that person into office, we can elect them out of office. So it's very important in those positions where you do have the people behind you and listen to the rhythm of the neighborhood and the drumbeat that we're giving you, that you take a heed to and that you listen to that in consideration on what you say and what you choose to do in our communities. We need things that are going to happen positively. We need things that are going to happen in a way that the minorities are considered, that people are feeling safe, that the vulnerable populations are feeling safe. And we don't need someone who makes us feel invisible. Again, that's happened too long and too many times throughout history.
I want to turn to education for a moment, because you've said that you wanted to, say, see more African-American history incorporated into it, more minority teachers, certainly. Give me a sense about what you think is lacking in the county system and what you would like to see in its place. And particularly, I would also add probably discipline as well.
When it comes to educational curriculum, yes. I grew up here on the Eastern Shore, graduated out of Waucomico County Schools, and never had an African-American history course until I got to college. And being an educator myself, I realized the more we know about one another, the more we tend to respect one another. And even though that we don't always agree, because you might not always like that person, but I think respecting that person for who they are as a human being is so important. And if we start to instill that in our children now, while they're in the K-12 environment, it definitely will help them when they become adults and dealing with diverse populations. We already know in 2030, the majority of the population culturally will be biracial, multiracial children, which will be brown children or beige children. So it's important that we are ready and preparing the mindset in our community and for those students who will be graduating with our curriculum, that we look at why don't we have Black history or African American history as a choice to have as a history credit. We don't have that. I've researched, I know Philadelphia has made it mandatory that they have to take various African American history courses prior to graduation. I'm wondering why they're right next door to us, why we don't have that here in the state of Maryland as a requirement. I know that when I was principal, I did serve a population of students that were minorities, and I did make sure that African American history was a part of their history courses that they took as part of their educational career. I think when you build up a community based on knowledge and not just telling us that we are slaves and that giving us a perspective that we offer more than just that part of history, there's a sense of esteem that is now vibrating through the community that makes us only stronger. And so I really, really hope to help create a framework to have a dialogue with the superintendent and maybe other superintendents here on the shore to see how important that is. And, of course, from my perspective as an African-American and coming to a school system where I never had an African-American history class, and when it was time to talk about my ancestors, it was very bleak and negative and hurtful and caused a lot of tension after we watched Roots or after we talked about the history of slavery. Very rarely did I hear about the Phyllis Wheatleys, the Harriet Tubmans, the Frederick Douglasses. You know, we didn't. Only for Black History Month.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. Do you see, in terms of both achievements and also discipline, do you see a problem in those two areas when it comes to our education system here?
Yes, I do. And that actually was my dissertation. My dissertation researched the attitudes and perceptions of suspension policies and how disciplinary practices were put forth. Unfortunately, nationally, minority students are suspended more disproportionately to the population of students that are in the school system. And so that opens up a whole nother conversation of how do we make sure we are providing an education that is being respectful and that it honors the diversity that we see in our classrooms. The teaching faculty in a K-12 environment is about 85% white female. But yet, we have numbers where there's 90% of African-American students in the school, and you might have one or two teachers that look like them. We have to get to the business of how do we use the knowledge of culture, how do we use that to shape how we discipline and communicate with children who we may think are out of line. You may see an African-American student and assume that they're being loud and rowdy, but if you come to my Thanksgiving dinner or my Kwanzaa celebration or my Christmas celebration, we're all very loud and excitable, and there's no aggression at all if you look at the whole picture. But if you're listening from afar, it may sound like we're arguing. But if you don't understand that as a person who is serving children of color, then you suspend them in a way that we never look at the bigger picture. Well, actually, no, they weren't arguing. They were having a conversation. They were making a resolution, but we just interceded and interjected and said, okay, you're suspended, or you go to parent conference, or you need to go to the suspension hall. I think it's very, very important that we look at that aspect when it comes to the schools that we are opening our doors up to the very diverse population of students that we serve. So that is a conversation, and it is a big issue in the nation, not just in Wacomico County.
Let me turn to healthcare, and particularly, we have the coronavirus pandemic, which has hurt minority communities, particularly African American community, very hard. What do you see happening there? What kind of efforts would you like to see in terms of trying to, one, certainly lower the number of cases within the community, but two, also to get that vaccination out to that community?
Mm-hmm. As far as the health, and right now, as far as you mean about COVID?
Yes, overall? About COVID. Yeah, about COVID, COVID. And obviously because the if you have underlying conditions, then it's worse for you when you mm-hmm. get COVID and so on. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. We know that African Americans have lots of underlying conditions such as high blood pressure, diabetes, asthma. All these things make us more vulnerable to when we do or if we do contract COVID. Our mortality rate isn't very good. Our recovery rate isn't very good. So it's very important that we look at that and understand that you still have a lot of African Americans, too, who don't trust hospitals, who don't trust doctors, who still believe that if I stay home and use this tea that my grandmother has told me to make up, that I will be fine, right? So it's about educating them, continuous education about our health, continuous awareness of our vulnerabilities when it comes to things like COVID-19, and then making sure we have funding provided to make sure they're getting the health care that they need. And unfortunately, that's a problem right now. COVID has brought a brighter light on issues that have always been in our African-American communities and minority communities. It's taken it to a whole nother level. It looks very differently now. It's really in your face when you look at the statistics and say, wow, you have that many who have contracted and that many who have passed away and that many who have underlying conditions that from after having it, still having a problem with breathing, right? And then you talk about a vaccine. Well, you have a population of people who have not a good history when it comes to you telling me you're going to give me a vaccination, right? We have the syphilis study. You injected knowingly what this was, telling this group of African-American men what it was not, and you killed them knowingly. So it's not going to be very easy for African-Americans in our community to line up and say, and hear someone say, well, this is a vaccine to prevent you from getting COVID. It's almost like a two-sided sword. Like, okay, I know that I'm vulnerable, whether it's my age or my diabetes or my high blood pressure or my asthma. But then I also know the history that you've used me and my ancestors as experimental rats. We know the Johns Hopkins story of how they went to seek out people, kidnap them, use them as scientific rats, a study. We know about the Henrietta Lacks, her cancer cells, and how she was treated and not honored for all the contributions she gave to herpes and AIDS and HIV and all these other kind of viruses that could take us over, you know. So we don't have a good history with trusting the medical field with injecting something in us that you're saying is going to help you, because our history doesn't have a good picture. It's a very gloomy and scary picture for a lot of African Americans. I don't know how to overcome that and how they're going to deal with that in COVID. I'm not quite sure everyone has even thought about that. So those are the issues that are pending right now with the health care and how we're going to serve the community during COVID.
Let me just ask you a couple of other quick questions. One is on the environment. And in particular, I know that there's a proposal for a natural gas pipeline to go down to Somerset County. I understand it goes through some minority communities. What's your position, or what's your organization's position, if you have any, on that pipeline and mm-hmm. what you see going on there?
Yes. We are opposing the pipeline. We have written letters to our representatives in Congress, our local delegates as well. We have conversations with our county council. We have had conversations with Somerset County. We have had conversations with the environmentalists. And I think our frustration was, this was something that was happening behind the scenes, and all of a sudden we were made aware of it when it's basically been agreed upon. It's coming. It's going to happen. even though there's many in the community who are just learning about it now, are very, very livid about this topic. My concern, as well as the branch's concern, how is it, again, that you choose to have a pipeline go through the largest part of that pipeline going through Somerset County, which we know is the poorest county on the Eastern Shore? How is that happening again? How is it that we have the landfills in the poorest part of our state where the population is brown people? So this is happening again, right under our noses. And they pull people in to agree. So we oppose it. I'm not quite sure what's going to happen with it. I really think 99% of it is a done deal. And then a lot of people in the community are very frustrated and angry because they're like, when did this happen? How is this going to happen? Who do they talk to? Why do they agree to it? And I'm very concerned. I'm very concerned about the side effects. We know that there's over, you know, what, thousands each year of fires and explosions from this type of pipeline. We know that now you have to dig up roads and stop traffic and reroute traffic so you take from our small businesses because people can't get to them. Again, when we just finished doing some work downtown Salisbury. So it's very concerning. I'm not quite sure what will happen if they're going to stop it because, like I said, I really think it's a done deal, but I think it also just, again, shows how we tend to continue to repeat history, even though we should learn from it. We continue to repeat history and we prey on the vulnerable populations of brown people in the poorest neighborhoods.
I want to turn
over and over again.
I want to turn finally to Mary Shante. She's been with the NAACP for a very long time. She's been the face of the chapter, and I wanted you to reflect on her legacy as a leader in this community, because she has been there a long time fighting the good fight, as it were.
Right. President Ashanti is a jewel in our community. She has definitely offered her mentorship and her guidance in my 2 years of being home and being active in our branch. She has wisdom that we're going to continue to use and disseminate in our actions forward. She has definitely a very big influence in the community. We had a holiday event last year, was pre-COVID, and she went around the room with all these people from the sheriff's department to county council, city council, the hospital, the board of education, and all these people that she has developed this relationship with. And we know that no matter what your status is, no matter how many titles you wear, but that rapport building and relationship will take you very, very far. So definitely watching and being on her shirt tail at every opportunity that she's allowed me to be, to listen in, she's leaving us with a great foundation to build from. She's leaving us with a great legacy of integrity, of knowledge, of experiences that can only make us stronger in our community as we move forward. She will be still on the executive committee, so she's not going to go very far away from us, and we're grateful for that. But she definitely has left us something great to for me as the next president to stand on, to build on, and to be proud of in the process.
Well, we've been speaking with Dr. Bronte DeShields. She is the new president of the Wacomico branch of the NAACP. She succeeds Mary Shante, who has been the president for a very, very long time. And Bronte, we appreciate you taking the time to talk with us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
This has been Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush. Thanks for listening.